Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. Let's go straight to Bernadette. Joe at RT.ie 51551 is our text number. Bernadette, good afternoon. What age were you when you were punished for a full year?
Joe, I was just after starting secondary school, so I guess you're talking about, what, 11 or 12?
Yeah. Okay. And what happened?
And what happened was, basically, after gym class, a few of us went in and were settling ourselves up in the bathroom, looking in the mirror and sorting out our hair and everything. And this nun came in anyway, and she told us all to get out, and she called me, and she said, you know, she said, you are hopeless, you are this, you are that, you're not a good-looking girl, you shouldn't be looking in the mirror at all. So she brought me into, she brought me into this boiler room then, and she started hitting me. Then another nun came along and opened the door, stopped her, and she allowed me back into class. So when she came back into the classroom, she told me to stand at the back of the class and face the wall, and that was it. That was my year facing the wall. Shocking.
Now, hang
absolutely
on.
Shocking.
Hang on. She would come into the class for English.
In her class, you know, for her subject.
Yes, yes.
Well, she'd come in, but I just had to be there.
But English is, what, 5 times a week at least, is it? With a double,
exactly.
Probably.
Yeah.
So she'd come in, and you'd be sitting facing, from your previous class, facing the blackboard.
Yeah.
And what was the protocol?
The protocol was, before she'd come in, I'd have to be standing at the back of the class and with my face to the wall. And if I didn't, she was going to give out to me.
So for that full year, that nun never saw your face, effectively.
I never really thought about it until, say, a few weeks ago. Do you know what I mean?
Like, for a full academic year, your English teacher, when you were 11 years of age in first year, your English teacher, every single English class.
Yep.
All she saw of you was your back.
Was,
and all you saw was a wall or whatever you were standing in front of.
Exactly. It's hard to believe. It really, really is, but it happened. And what can I say? That's the way times were. And because I, first of all, I was a Kit Oak. So straight away, if you're a Kit Oak, left-handed person, you were on a downer. The nuns just did not like you, no matter what.
Yeah.
They just picked on you. So I was picked on.
Because you were left.
Yeah, yeah.
The Barack, list all the people in the world that are, you know, that are in the public eye. Barack Obama.
Exactly.
But come back to standing. Did you stand for the 50 minutes?
I had to.
But how could
now,
you take
you know yourself, the
Bernadette,
being,
how could you take notes? How could you open your books?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just had to do it. Table beside me, or the girls would hand me stuff, but it's just as I wasn't allowed to be part of the class, I'd stay at the back of the class, and that was it, for looking at myself. She tried to convince me I was very vain, that I needed to start thinking I'm good looking, that I was ugly looking, all these things. You know, which was totally wrong.
Did you tell any? This was an adult, remember,
this
doing
was an
this
adult.
To a 10,
everybody knew it.
11-year-old.
Everyone knew it.
Did you tell any other adults?
Well, you see, in times back then,
I know.
Parents were afraid, you know, because religion was so prevalent in all our lives. It was the answer for everything. And, you know, my mother, she was a fantastic woman. She'd say, oh, pray, pray, pray. You'll get over it. You'll just keep praying, that sort of thing. And they were afraid of the nuns. They were afraid to do anything or say anything.
Did you? That,
you know, in those times, people were very afraid.
Bernadette, did a principal ever stick their head in the class and say, sister, whatever her name was, you're wanted. And in other words, did any other adult ever see this punishment?
They did. But there were the times, you know. Even the girls I went to school with, you know, even to this day, they remember it. You know, they had a laugh over. We all had laughs over. It's only, I guess, in the last few weeks with your programme, it was just brought it to mind with myself. And I said, talk about a confidence booster. It did nothing for my confidence. It really broke it, if anything.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Stay with us, Bernard. Mary, good afternoon. Joe at RT.ie, 51551, or simple post if you want
Hello,
to
write Joe.
A letter. You're up at the blackboard. What were you asked to do? What age were you for a start?
I was about fifth class, I'd say 10.
10,
okay. 10 or 11.
Okay.
Yeah. She asked me to trace a river on the map on the blackboard, and I traced it the wrong way instead of from the source. So she hit me across the head, and my head then hit off the blackboard.
Simply for drawing a river
The wrong way.
Left to right instead of right
to left.
Left
to right, right to left, yeah. So there was a classroom of fear, really, we couldn't learn. I loved learning, but I couldn't really learn.
We'll try and get a better line. Stay there, Mary. I'm going to go to Charlie, but I'll come back to you in a sec. Charlie, what in the name of God is Chinese torture on a child? By an adult?
An adult man, a big, strong man, Joe. He squeezed the four fingers, Joe, until the blood went up to your fingers. Your four fingers were filled with blood. And then he took out a ruler and he tapped the top of your fingers like that.
Yeah.
The pain was excruciating. But the pain actually got worse afterwards when the blood started to return back into your fingers. He called it the Chinese torture.
Did he invent this? Where is this creativity that we never saw in our schools in any other shape or form? Where is this creativity and punishment methods coming from? A Chinese torture. You grab your forefingers, squeeze the tips, the blood would be locked in the tops of your fingers until they were bright red. And then he'd hit you. Then he'd hit you.
I don't know, Joe, where it came from. Well, that's what he done, and he done it to loads of kids, you know. Wasn't the only one. He done it to loads of kids. He started to pick you out in his moods, you know.
Yeah.
But that's what we were subjected to, Joe.
And then you say you were, when you were 14, you had a summer job riding a horse in the Phoenix Park, and a Christian brother arrived.
Yes, Joe. I was in a stables up there in the Phoenix Park. Once there was a riding stables up there in Ashtown. And I seen this Christian brother coming up with two children. He took them and he told me that they were orphans. And he took them out for the day to give them a ride up on the ponies in the Phoenix Park. And this man had a reputation, Joe, of interfering with children. He was actually removed from a school. And what he used to do was he used to give them sweets for anybody who got the question right or wrong. And he put the sweet in their pocket. And then he'd interfere with them when he was putting the sweet in the pocket. Now, Joe, this guy was in his mid-50s, maybe 60. How was he allowed to take two little orphan children out of the orphanage?
So he put them in your horse and trap. And where did you sit?
I was in the park, Joe. I was driving it around it, you know.
Okay.
Ashtown.
But where did the brother sat in the back with the two children, did he?
No, he didn't. He just stood there at the Ashtown Lodge there, and waited for me for to come back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he asked me then, what was I doing, you know.
Yeah.
He asked me, Joe, would I meet him outside the Rainbow Cafe in O'Connor Street.
I remember, very popular.
Yeah, it was the in place, and we discussed me future and all that sort of thing. And we'd have a nice cup of coffee and ice cream and all that.
And I remember coffee was a novelty, and then, ice cream was a novelty.
Oh, it was a big novelty.
So what was he up to, Charlie?
Oh, I don't know. He actually sent a letter to me home from the head office in the North Circular Road for to meet him. And my father said, he sounds like a nice man. You should go off and meet him. You know what I mean? He'd be able for the guys you're in life. Or I heard about the stories about him. Because my next door neighbour was in his class. And I heard the stories about him. And I seen her afterwards, Joe, in the evening, heard it where some fellow was suing him or something over sex, over interfering with him. Yeah. But how could a man be able, allowed to take two children out of an orphanage?
What about the soccer? Everyone's talking about
it. Because he had a con. Yeah.
Because he had
And Joe, another thing too.
Yeah.
There was two fellas were seen in the paper. They were attending the soccer match at Daly Mount. And they were taken up in front of the class and they were bashed and hammered. And we were told, Joe, that soccer was invented by the British soldiers here who cut off a priest's head and the blood was spouting from the priest's head and they kicked the priest's head down Grafton Street. And one of the soldiers jumped back because he didn't want to catch the priest's head with the blood coming from out of it. And that's why you don't handle the ball in soccer.
So two boys, people find this hard, but two lads from your class, what age, 10, 12, 14, what age, Charlie?
Yeah, okay. Oh, they were out maybe 14.
Okay, they go to a soccer match.
Yeah.
The most innocent thing. They were photographed in the Evening Herald or the Press or whatever it was then, the Mail.
That's right, yeah.
They were in a photograph of the crowd.
Yeah,
they were spotted by the teacher or the priest or whatever.
The head brother. Yeah.
Head brother in school.
Yeah. 6 foot 2, Joe. He was 6 foot 2, a big man. We were warned not to go to the match. I think it was a communist country or something like that. It'd be in the late 50s. Yeah.
And he brought them up, and he brought the two boys up in front of the class, gave them an almighty hiding, as you say, for going to a soccer match.
An almighty hiding. And then he explained how soccer was invented by cutting the priest's head off with the blood.
Lunacy.
Yeah.
It's amazing you still remember the Chinese torture.
Yeah, Chinese torture. I could never get it. You got your fingers and he squeezed up as hard as he could. You're about 9 or 10 years of age and the blood is running in your hand and he's getting a ruler. And he took about 5 minutes to do it. It was deliberate, like it wasn't a quick thing. Slowly, surely, tapping away, looking to see the pain on your face. And then you started with the cry. And then he'd... you'd go back and you'd have to hold your hand up on your, and it was always on your left. If you're a left hand, if you're a right hand, you do it on your left hand.
Yeah.
If you're left handed, you do it on your right hand. Yeah.
Okay, Charlie, what do you think of all? I've heard it. I heard it yesterday and I'm sick of it. I really am. Someone say a few clatters never did me any harm when I was in school. Look at the harm that all this punishment has caused people. Now, a lot of people, thankfully, they're all in their 50s, 60s, 70s now and 80s, and we've had people in their 90s as well. Thankfully, as people talk about it, it does help. But it did happen, and anyone thinks a few clatters never did you any harm, but some of the tortures were just unbelievable.
He gave me sixpence one time, right?
Yeah.
To go down to the horseshoe shop, just Cable Street there.
Yeah.
To bring back a bamboo cane for to whip me across the legs. Can you imagine the fear in the little child going down and then having to go back? You know?
Yeah.
That fear.
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 Pervaded everything. Okay, Charlie, say listen to Declan now. Declan, what weapon of punishment did your teacher find in your empty classroom?
Well, there was a few different incidents, but mainly the first one for us all would be if we were considered bold or that the letter came out and you get the letter across the palm of your hand.
Yeah.
But if you held back and you didn't show any tears, you were taken out of the classroom then and brought into the toilets.
Okay.
And there then he would roll up your sleeve and he would give it to you across the wrist and he wouldn't stop until you cried. It was like, and you were held back because you didn't want to give in. And he would just keep giving you the leather in the bathroom on your own. And then when he seen tears, then he was satisfied enough and you were left back in the classroom. But no, I was a bit of a devil and getting up to no
good. Declan, you were a bit of a child. Will you stop? You were a bit of a child. Did you commit any... Declan, hang on. Did you commit any crimes? Did you stab anyone? Did you assault anyone? Did you rob anyone? No, you were a bit of a child. What age were you?
Yeah. Well, that was around 1973. So I suppose I was 11 on 12. Another time I was in the classroom and they were coming back from lunch and we were all jumping around in the classroom and I just happened to be nearest to the door. And as he was coming up the steps into the prefab, he had an empty milk bottle in his hand and I never seen him coming in and I was actually standing on a chair. And as he came in, he swung around and he hit me across the forehead with the milk bottle. And
A glass milk bottle.
Yeah, a glass milk bottle across the forehead. And at 3 o'clock before I was getting the bus home, he handed me a note.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, give that to your mother when you go home. And when I went home and I gave the note to my mother, and he says, I'm sorry, Mrs. Fleming, he says, but Declan was misbehaving today and I had to give him a bit of a tap. And I never told her that he hit me. But you were kind of, when you went home sometimes and you ever said, oh, I got in trouble, you were kind of told, well, you must have done something to deserve it.
I know.
You know?
But he hit you on the part of, okay, first episode, lashing with the leather. If you didn't cry, brought you into the bathroom, which is outrageous, pulled your sleeves up and start giving you the leather across your wrist. Is it until you cried? Until you cried?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then he takes a milk bottle. And remember, Declan, we had a story on this programme once of a young man who got a smack of a bottle and it wasn't thrown maliciously, it was thrown stupidly in a crowd.
Yeah.
He got a smack of a bottle and it was the toughened end of every bottle is the base of the bottle. And he got a hit on the back of the neck with the bottle. Again, as I say, completely innocently, in fairness, as far as I know. And he's paralysed for life.
Jesus.
The smack of a bottle on the head.
Yeah. I know another day he had a girl up at the top of the class for whatever reason, whether it was over homework or something, and he was ridiculing her, giving out to her, and behind him was the big press that kept all the pencils and copybooks, and on top of it there was a statue of Our Lady, about 18 inches or 2 foot tall, this big statue. I can still picture it.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was that enraged with her. He went back with his fist and he hit the press and the statue fell down and smashed. And then he turned his vengeance on her and he said, now look what you have done. And he started beating her across the back of the head because he broke the statue, you know?
An old statue, chalk.
Yeah.
Chalk. I'm not showing any disrespect for the nature of the statue, but it was. I know there is a reverence for the image, but the statue is made of chalk and it's easily replaceable. Easily replaceable. And he lashed into the girl.
Yeah. Another day we were talking about religion, and now I was one who would give me opinion, even though I was only smiling. He was on about...
That's what education is about.
Yeah, Catholics are right and Protestants are wrong and this, that and the other. And I had put my hand up and I says, but what about people, I says, who are brought up by their parents and they're taught what their religion is. And I says, there'll be people in jungles and that, I said, maybe think that the sun is their God and stuff. And he went absolutely furious with me. And how dare you say we are... But I said, they're only believing what they're brought up. Or he put me outside. He said, put me out in the yard and you don't come back in until you have a good thought about how you disrespect the Catholic religion and all this. Like, but I was glad that I had spoke up.
Good lad.
You know, because,
good lad.
Like, And now we did have one other teacher. All the rest of the teachers, now thank God we didn't have any nuns or priests. It was just an ordinary school. But there was another teacher, and that was when we were in fourth class. Now, if he caught two of us fighting in the aisle or something like that, he would bring us in before the class would start, and ever which two of us was were fighting, and he would bring us in, and he'd say, now, if you want to be brave fighting in the classroom, or sorry, out in the yard, he'd make us stand face to face, and he'd say, now, put one hand behind your back, and then he would make us slap the other lad across the face, and then it was his turn to hit you across the face, and then he says, now are you so brave? If you just want to fight, do it in front of the classroom. And he might make us do that three or four times, and then he'd say, go and sit down, like, you know. God. You know?
Charlie, is that you exasperating? You can believe all this, because you saw variations of all this punishment. I'm thinking of Bernadette down the line there. She's off my screen at the minute. But Bernadette, it was made stand for a full year in every English class. The teacher would come in, and the teacher, Bernadette knew to stand up and meet you, go to the back of the room and stand facing a wall.
Yeah. Well, you know, I remember sitting down and he walking by me and he twisting me ear. And I said, I done nothing, sir.
Yeah.
Well, you done something many a time when I wasn't watching. Yeah.
Okay, says it all, Charlie. Good to meet you, Charlie Declan, Mary Moore. Listen to more voices. Joe with RT.ie 51551.
I attended a religious-run secondary school in the mid-60s. Corporal punishment was the norm of the day, usually administered by slaps to the palm of the hand by a pointer or ruler. I remember an incident when the teacher asked me a question in Latin class and I didn't know the answer. He insisted I did know the answer, but I was just being stubborn. His normally red face was approaching a puce colour when he broke his pointer on my palms. He then proceeded to punch me on the shoulder and the head with his closed fist. His fury increased, and he left the classroom looking for another stick to beat me with. Normally, when a teacher left a class, pandemonium would break out. On this occasion, there was none of that, just fear and tension, with me standing on my desk in near breakdown, tears, sobs, the whole lot. I could see him through the Georgian window going to the front lawn and taking a branch off a tree in order to make a stick to beat me with. He returned and continued. I have forgotten how it ended. Maybe I have just blanked it out. I was just 15 at the time. Naturally, I did not tell my parents. Some years later, he was honoured for his services to education. Has it affected me adversely? Yes, it has. I have never forgiven myself for taking the assault, for that is what it was, for not standing up for myself, for not fighting back, or just walking out of the classroom immediately. Do I forgive him? Probably not.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe at RT.ie. Pat Kelly is in Kildare. Pat.
Oh, good afternoon, Joe.
Yeah.
Joe, I just wanted to, because I've been listening to the show there for the last couple of weeks and all the stuff that's coming up. But, Joe, just to briefly tell you, I was born in 1953, Joe, out in the country,
mm-hmm.
which was about a mile and a half from the school I attended, the National School.
Right.
And so we walked in and out of school every day, a gang of us. But the school I went to was mixed up until second class.
Okay.
So, in other words, like it was, we used to call it baby infants, high infants, first class, second class. And then that was all the teachers in that school were all nuns. And three of the nuns were absolutely angels.
Yeah.
They were absolutely beautiful, beautiful people and very compassionate and everything, because times were hard enough, like around the 1960s, 59 or 60, when the incident happened with me. But then when you went to second class, you went across the road to the boys' school, and there was two rooms in the boys' school, two teachers, late teachers, third and fourth class, and fifth and sixth class in the other room. But when I was in around first year, first class, or maybe second class, we were out in the yard one day,
yeah.
and I was allegedly used bad language. Joe, I was about 7 years of age at the time.
Yeah.
living out in the country. My father was a blacksmith, and we had an absolutely brilliant upbringing childhood because of the people coming into the forge and all of the and the farmer, local farmers getting repairs done. All that stuff, the local guardie on the bike coming in, getting the news and all that stuff. So we had an absolutely fantastic childhood. But this particular nun, one of the girls in the school, she complained to the nun in the playground that I used bad language. Joe, I did not even know the words at the time.
Yeah.
So this nun came out. She grabbed me. My sister, my eldest sister, she was in sixth class, or fifth or sixth, I say it was sixth class she was in. And she witnessed the, and the reason I'm telling you all this story, Joe, because there's an end to this, she witnessed the hiding that I got. The hiding I got off that nun was all around the head with her bare hands. She hit me all around the head with her bare hands. And she also had a cane, which she gave me a few slaps across the buttocks or the body or somewhere like that. But the beating lasted for, it lasted for, to me anyway, it looked like a long time, or seemed like a long time. But I carried that through my whole life, Joe. And it used to come up on a few occasions. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't think about it all of the time, but it did come up. But it came up at one particular stage when that same nun came to my father's funeral 20 years ago. And the reason she was at the funeral was she was living in a retired home for nuns somewhere around Dublin, I think, at the time. But my father was a brilliant singer. He was on the church choir.
Okay.
And he also sang in the Phoenix Park in 1979. He was part of that choir of 2,500 or 3,000 people. He was part of that.
For the
and
pub,
the reason I'm telling you, for the pub. But she came to my father's funeral and she sympathized with all my family. But when she came to me, I wasn't insulting towards her. I wasn't rude towards her. I just said, no, you're okay there, go ahead. And I would not accept her sympathies. I would not. But the reason she came, because my father was on the choir for 60 years. Yeah. He got the Benny Moretti medal and all that sort of stuff, like, you know. But the reason that I'm building up the story, Joe, is because that hiding that she gave me, and through no fault of some of the pupils or the students in the nun school, she always favoured all the businessmen's children. And also, the woman who I'm still friendly with, the girl at the time, she was a girl that said I used bad language, and she was a business person's daughter.
So she was
brave. Now, it wasn't their fault. It wasn't the fault of the children, or, and I want to make that very clear, or it wasn't the fault of the businessmen either. This was just something that the nuns had got into their own head, that they're better than whoever. The lads living out the road, you know that type of thing. So,
but Pat, even if you had used a bold word, innocently, a bold word, nothing would ever justify that punishment.
Nothing in the wider world. Now, Joe, there was another side to this person as well. And the other side to her was that because she became the musical director of the church choir, the local church choir. And, of course, my father was singing there since she was a child. And she used to run, or not run, but have singing choir classes in the school. Right. And she would never put any of our family in the choir. She had us out at the back. We weren't able to sing, but miraculously, Joe, when we all ended up in trades and we all had very successful careers and all of that, and some of us are retired now, we also were semi-professional musicians for about 50 years.
So for some reason, no reason, she took a scunder against...
Some of the children in general, it was always about the business people or the people that were very well off. Now, we were we weren't well off. We were an ordinary family. But we had an absolutely fantastic childhood. Like, my mother was a great cook, and the garden was always full of veg. You know, the usual carry on out the countryside and that, like, you know. And
okay,
because I was listening to you, Joe, there for the last couple of weeks, I just said to myself, no, I'm going to tell Joe Duffy about this story. Yeah. Because when that particular woman died about 5 or 6 years ago, there was glowing tributes paid to her from the community. But I know for a fact, when I go for a pint up the town and I meet some of the lads I went to school with, her name always comes up.
Yeah. Okay, you know? Okay. As Big Maggie says, it's the start of the John B. Keane play, which is asked by the Undertaker. I have to say now, Big Maggie, she's asked by the Undertaker, will I put on the headstone, dearly beloved husband, father, and whatever. And Maggie says, there's enough lies written on the headstones of Ireland without me adding to them.
There seems to be enough lies
written. Pat, good to meet you. That's Pat Kelly. Thanks indeed. Liam is in Chum, Sisters of Mercy, west of Ireland. Liam, what was your experience?
Joe, good afternoon. Joe, when I was a child in that school, I was about 5 years of age. There was, I was too quiet, the nun said. And because I was left-handed, she'd tie my hand behind my back so as I'd write with my right hand. So she said, I'm going to teach you a lesson. So there was a furnace there, down steps near the class, just across from the class.
Yeah.
So she locked me down in the furnace, in the black furnace. She locked the door. I don't know what at the time I was down there. I can't remember what it was, but it seemed a long, long time.
Of course.
And then she came and took me up and put me back into class. And she said, that'll teach you. If you're quiet in class anymore, you'll go down there again. 5 years of age.
And you didn't know when she put you down. You didn't know whether you were going to be there.
No, I don't know what time.
Yes, of course. Well, you didn't.
And I was afraid. I was afraid to fall down the steps, so I just didn't move on the step I sat. I was afraid to fall down the steps because there was many of them. That report doesn't mean things didn't happen, Joe. But many people have been talking to me about similar circumstances.
Yeah.
With them.
Pitch
black hole. I came home. I didn't tell my mother or father, and I never slept without the light being on till I was about 40.
Wow.
In my bedroom.
Wow.
I would dream about the black hole. And then I went on to the CBS primary school. And there was a brother there who sexually abused me in front of the students. And then when he finished sexually abusing me, he'd get up and the other students that he did it to, and he'd sing the Northern Moor in the County Galway. Let's all join in and sing the Northern Moor in the County Galway. Whenever I hear that song, I cringe. And he had a leather, which he called the Black Mariah. And he'd give you six of the best. I don't know where that name came from. The Black Mariah.
Yeah.
So when he was sick, we pray he was sick, but then we stopped praying he'd be sick because we were sent to another brother. Yeah. Right? And he'd pick you out for doing nothing, bring you out to the top of the class, put you sitting on his knees, catch your thumb and turn your thumb down towards the ground. Can you imagine that?
The pain.
Your thumb down towards the ground. The pain of that.
What became of that brother?
He's dead. The other brother is still alive.
And did the brother that was sexually abusing you, did he ever face a court?
He's in jail.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. And then the last day in secondary school, 1980.
Yeah.
We were in a prefab, and the teacher, he was a very vicious, cross teacher. He'd always joke, like, about Galway, being up Galway, and my mother happened to come from Mayo, and he'd say, "Who are you up for?" I'd say, "Mayo," and nothing ever happened till the last day in school. Last sentence of the school book, and he came down and he says, "Are you still up for Mayo?" I said, "I am." He gave me a belt across the face, a slap of his strong hand across the face, and I flew across the floor and hit me head of the prefab. School is the best days of your life, Joe. Never. Never. But there's one thing I have to say. There was one lovely, lovely teacher in that school, in that primary school, the Christian Brothers Primary School. And she writes to me every Christmas. I was in her class.
Lovely.
Every Christmas. And she says, "You were a young, innocent little boy." And I need say no more, because she knew.
Yeah. Yeah.
She knew. And I really, really appreciate her.
Yeah.
So no wonder, Joe. No wonder there's dysfunctional families in this country. There's alcoholism. There's broken families. I talked to many of the lads I went to school with. It has affected them. They left the country, some of them. They are, most of them, broken marriages. Talk about what happened. No one to talk to, but talk to me, because I'll talk about it with them. Some suicides. You know, you don't know the damage that has done to people in this country. And then I hear the song, "Suffer little children who come unto thee." Did the priests ever hear it? Did the brothers ever hear it? Do they hear it? And I just say to parents of children, talk to your children. Watch your children. Mind your children. Don't let ever happen to me, happen to them, or what happened to people that I went to school with.
Liam, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Joe. God bless everyone that was on here. And mind yourself. Thanks, Joe.
I'm only in my early 50s, but when I was in fourth class, I was given the ruler every day by a lay teacher who took a dislike to me. In sixth class, it was a nun who taught me. She struck me so hard one day that I went in one direction and my glasses flew in the other. My brothers were also subjected to the duster, and they were lifted by the locks of their hair by the brothers and by lay teachers. This was commonplace.
I started school when I was 3 years old. I was a happy, confident, bubbly little messer until first class, when my life changed forever. I will list only a few examples of the abuse I suffered. I loved watches and was a bit of a show-off, so on day one of first class, I wore my dad's gold watch into school. I was six. It didn't take long before the Christian brother spotted it on my wrist. He dragged me to the top of the classroom, took the watch from me, and after 10 of the best on my hands, got me to confess in front of the class that I had taken it from my father's bedside locker. He proceeded to take down my trousers and pants and beat me savagely on the bare behind with his leather. He christened me Thief Boy from that day onwards. That brother would teach me for 2 years. Another day, I was asked to staple some pages together. I somehow got the stapler jammed and could not free it. Upon asking for help, the same brother stormed to my desk, calling me all manner of worthless names. He fixed the stapler and told me to hold out my hand so he could demonstrate how to use it properly. He proceeded to take my thumb and index finger and attempted to staple them together. He didn't succeed, except to drive a staple through my nail and into my thumb. There was constant mocking and name-calling. The other boys in the class were encouraged to join in, which made me fair game for the bullies, so the abuse followed me everywhere. Every day. It got to a point where I began to shoplift on a Friday, only to put it back in the shop on a Monday morning. I was trying to convince myself that I was a good boy and not a thief, as I had been labelled. Joe, corporal punishment was banned in 1982, but it did not stop. I know I am a good person, but feel robbed of the life I could have lived.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
When I was four, my mother died and my younger brother and I were very lucky to be sent to stay with my grandparents for about 4 years. I attended the local primary school and had a very kind and gentle female teacher. This all changed when my father remarried and I was sent to a different national school. Here, the fourth class master was sadistic and used a bamboo cane for beating and slapping. He picked on certain children for beating while wiping the sweat from his forehead. sadistic and cruel. During this time, I developed a very bad stammer and was beaten because I missed spelling. I knew how to spell, but just not be able to get it out in time before I was hammered with the cane so many times. I was moved again to another Christian Brothers school. Again, my stammer got me walloped and beaten. I was put back 1 year because of my lack of academic ability. In exams, I was always in the top five in the class, but I lacked the communication skills. If you missed spelling, you were sent to the principal's office, where the brother would put his hand on your bottom and sometimes his hand down your trousers. Because of this, at age 15, I made the decision not to go to secondary school. Instead, I went to work as an apprentice and also went to night school and had private tuition. I eventually left this country and had a very successful career abroad.
When you were told day in, day out that you are good for nothing and you'll end up in the gutter every day, when you are sneered at and beaten for the smallest thing or nothing, you grow up into an adult with the lowest of lowest self-esteem. I'll never be rid of the nuns. I will never be rid of the nuns. They have had the last laugh. They live in my dreams and my nightmares. They come back to get me most nights in my bed, sadly, when I sleep.
Listening to your programme on Monday about the leather strap reminded me that we had a brother in our school that had elected to have coins stitched into the ends of his for greater impact. One day, he decided to give us all six of the best. His technique was that he would hold our wrist with his left hand while he leathered us with his right. He'd do it with so much force that the leather would hit his soutane in and around where his trouser pocket was beneath the robe. Just before he finished with us, while beating the last boy, a box of matches in his pocket caught fire. He beat the flames out, but he was very burned all around his thigh. That was the only highlight of corporal punishment. Justice was done.
We have phone calls from Australia, from the UK. Let me begin with Chris Hughes in the UK. The role of a dice, Chris.
Hi, Joe. Yeah, indeed. And as we would describe it in Belfast, I live in the north of Ireland. God bless us. So, yeah, it was, I was about seven. We moved in. We, you know, you had a primary 1A and a primary 1B and then a 2A and a 2B and a 3A. So when I was in about primary 3, I think it was about seven, they amalgamated both classes so they'd become one in order that building work could be done at the school.
Yeah.
So instead of there being 27 in the class, there was now 54.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this teacher decided that he would literally rule with an iron rod, so to maintain some kind of discipline. You know, 54 7-year-olds. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
However, we used to sit, I don't know, I'm sure some of your listeners would remember the old desk. It had one seat and it was split in half and two of you sat together. So we sat three to a desk then. And anyway, one of the lads was talking and the teacher turned around and said to me, "Hughes, get out here." And I kind of came out and I said, "Why? What have I done, sir?" And he said, "You were talking." And I said, "I wasn't." And he said to me, "Well, who was it then?" I said, "I don't know, because I wouldn't reveal who it was."
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, even then at seven.
Yes.
Yeah. But at seven back in Belfast, nobody liked to talk. Do you know what I mean? Even then, so I wouldn't reveal who it was.
You're a bitch, yeah.
So anyway, so he told me to hold up my hand, and I did so, and he put it in it a pair of dice, and he said to me, "Roll the dice." So I rolled the dice, and I rolled a double six, and he just produced out of his pocket a short bamboo cane, quite sturdy, quite thick. And he lifted my hand up and hand up and hand up higher and higher and higher so he could get full force onto, not my hand, but onto my fingertips.
Yeah.
And every time, being a kid, you'd try and get your hand out of the road, he would lift it up and give you another one. So he ended up giving me six on my fingertips of each hand and told me to go and sit down. Well, promptly, I tried not to, but it was crying me. He said, "Joe, you know, because he was a bull of a man, and it was, he didn't hold back when he was swinging at you. Do Do you know what I mean? So, anyways, so that was bad. And I got home and my mother obviously had seen I was crying or had been crying and said to me, "How was school today, son?" I thought, oh, no. In those days, she had to tell the truth all the time. And by the way, God forgive me, but this was the first and last time I told her the truth about what happened in school. But anyway, so I said, yeah, I got slapped. Mm. And she gave me such a dump, you know, because you were letting down the family and letting down her if you were slapped in school. Back in those days, that's what they thought. And I was, she said, "And how many times did you get slapped?" I said, 12. And she said, "Just wait, go up to your room and just wait till your father gets home." Which was really instilling the fear of God into me, which it did, it worked. So I went upstairs and I kind of fell asleep until I was woken by one of my brothers. And he said to me, "Look, Dad wants to see you downstairs." Well, I don't know, I've seen movies where men on death row are walking to their execution, you know, and I can tell you too, I felt like that. And I mean that, you know, I thought, oh God, I'm going to get killed here. You know, just because I got slapped 12 times. So when I went in, my father said to me, "Hello, son, how are you?" I said, "I'm okay." He said, "How was school?" I said, "Dad, I got slapped." He said, "What did you get slapped for?" I said, "Nothing." He said, "No, come on, tell me, son, what did you get slapped for?" I said, "I didn't get slapped. It was one of the other boys at the desk was talking and the teacher blamed me." He said, "Right. So he slapped you then in the wrong?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "How many times did you get slapped?" And I said, "I could slap 12 times. I'll never forget his answer, Joe. He said to me, "Jesus, Mary and Joseph, did you kill somebody?" I said, "No, no. I could, the other boy was talking. I could slap 12 times." He said, "How did, why did he slap you 12 times?" I said, "It was, I rolled the dice." My father sat and looked up at me and he said, "Say that again, B son." I said, "I rolled the dice. That's what you do." And he said, "That determines how many slaps you get." I said, "Yeah." He said, "So, does everybody roll the dice?" I said, "They do." He said, "So if you come in with no homework done, what happens?" I said, "You roll the dice. If you're caught fighting in the schoolyard, what happens?" I said, "You roll the dice. If you come in and you can't do anything or you're shouting class or something," he said, "you roll the dice." He said, "I see." And so he asked me to remind him of my teacher's name, which I did. And at that time, he lived about 5 or 7 minutes walk away from our house. And so we're all sitting, I was allowed to stay down then, and we're watching TV, and then my father got up and walked out, put his coat on and left. Anyways, it transpires. My father had went round to this particular teacher's house and rapped the door. Wow. And explained to him in quite a forceful manner, if you like, that if he practiced that on me in future, if I lived in no uncertain terms, what would happen? And now I always ask, I said, "What did the teacher say? What did he say in reply?" And he said, "Well, he couldn't really reply because it was like a vice grip on his larynx and surrounding tissue. So he couldn't really make any reply." Wow. And the following morning, Joe, my father went down to the school, to the primary school, and he went into the principal's office. Who demanded to know who he was and there without an appointment. And in those days, they were gods. Do you know what I mean? And so my father said to explain what had happened to me the previous day. And he then proceeded to tell the head, the principal of the school, that if he permitted that to happen and if anything happened to me again, he would kind of enjoy the same fate as the teacher involved. To which the headmaster decided he would phone the police.
Yes, of course.
And when he said that, my father said, "That's great. I'll use the phone after you. And I will phone." It would have been the equivalent of what's called the CCMS up north, you know, the Catholic Council for Maintained Schools, you know, for Catholic kids. And he said, "And I'll tell them just what you're doing, letting this teacher do this to 7-year-olds. You know?
Babies.
It's brutal. You know?
What a...
So like many of your listeners before you, you know, sorry, Joe, I cut across you there.
No, don't go ahead. Like many of your listeners before you.
Like many, all the listeners, basically, and that you've had on for the past couple of weeks. You know, I'm now 66.
Yeah.
This happened to me when I was about 7.
Yeah.
And I can remember it as if it was yesterday.
As you've just retold.
And, you know, and... When you look at it, and we thought then that was just par for the course, and that was all there was to it.
Yeah.
Although my father very thankfully interjected and made sure that wasn't to happen again ever. But you know, tough times.
What a man, and your mother as well. The two of them sit gently on your shoulders, and you're sitting on the shoulders of giants, as a lot of us are. And your parents. Well, so vividly told, Chris. 59 years ago.
Well,
59 years ago, Chris.
Years ago,
Just shows
and
you.
And I didn't, you know, says it all. I had,
says it all.
And I got caned when I went to grammar school, you know, because there was character priests were there, and one of the priests didn't deal with someone who I actually, in later years, became very friendly with. Yeah. And they told me he tried for years to get out of the job. He hated it. But, you know, I got caned in on nothing, Joe. Nothing, no matter how hard I was hit by teachers with other straps in grammar school or anything else, nothing in my life was as painful as that. I was, my hands were sore for a week, you know.
So vividly told and so vividly remembered 59 years ago, and you've explained in your own, in the last 6 minutes, you've explained why it is emblazoned on your memory, branded on your memory. Chris, good, thank you so much, Chris, and kind regards. Joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I'm reaching out to you from New York. I went to a small primary school in Kilkenny, and my story is not as horrific as some of your listeners, but this story has affected me my whole life. I had the same teacher for 2 years when I was only 6 and 7 years old. So in class, we were learning to tell the time, and for the life of me, I couldn't remember 25 to or 22. So my teacher, for want of another word, would stand over my shoulder and ask me the time. If I got it wrong, which I did more often than not, I would get her engagement ring right into the side of my head. This went on for every single thing and every time I got something wrong. This teacher left an horrific effect on me right to this day. On a return visit home, I saw her, and it all came flooding back 50 years later. As I write this, I have tears in my eyes. Regards from a broken 6-year-old child.
The year was 1966-1967 in a boys' national school. I had a teacher who was aggressive and violent to his pupils, but there was a more sinister side to him. If you answered a question correctly, as a reward, he would often give threepence or sixpence. But you had to fish it out from his pocket, and in doing so, brush against his genitals. Then he would, as I now realise, masturbate behind his morning paper. I was about 10 or 11 years old at the time. One evening, as I was calling up to see my friend, I saw his car parked on the estate. He called me over and invited me for a drive. We drove out to the country and he parked up. He said he'd teach me to drive. We swapped places, and as soon as I was seated behind the wheel, he started feeling my genitals and kissing me. He kept asking me, "Have you not got a jack?" I didn't realise that this was slang for an erection. He took out his penis and masturbated. Afterwards, he gave me a 10-shilling note and told me not to say a word. But I told my friend about it. Some weeks later, I was called for an interview by a priest, who was a curate at the time. I repeated my story. I don't know what happened after that. It's lost in the mists of time.
I am yet another child who was physically assaulted at the age of 9 by my teacher. It left me with a lifetime of psychological trauma. In adulthood, I met an old classmate, a woman in her 50s, who'd witnessed the attack. and she told me just how much seeing the vicious attack impacted on her also.
We're going to Australia now and to Mary. And Mary, sorry for holding you. Mary, good afternoon. Tell us your experience.
Hi, good afternoon to you. Good night from here.
Yeah, of course, sure. What?
I was at primary school in the 50s.
Yeah.
In a country town. And, yes, I mean, I didn't experience anything as nasty as the stories I've just been listening to, which are really horrific. But it was going on all the time. Now, the one thing I wanted to contact you about was to give you another item for your rogues gallery of implements that were used to harm children. I had music lessons given by a nun, and whenever I missed a note or whatever, made a little mistake, I got rapped across the knuckles with a conductor's baton.
The little sharpest.
And made with some kind of hardwood, which obviously would give very nasty stings.
Sting, yeah.
And so you can add that one to your list. Yeah. I don't know if you've had one already.
Yeah, no, it's on the list. Yeah.
But the experiences my sisters and I had in that convent school, they all tally with the same experiences with the same nuns. One of them, we definitely believe, was psychotic. She used to fly into the most appalling rages and throw children around the class. And she would also denigrate us and mock us. But the one thing I also noticed, it was a large country town and a large school, so we had quite a cross-section of kids from the town, which meant, of course, a wide strata across society. And obviously, certain kids were favoured, others got short shrift, some were ignored. And it wouldn't be difficult for you to imagine which kids were got the lion's share of attention and which were ignored. So generally, the children of professional and business, big business classes, they were the ones at the top of the class, got the most attention. And we had children who came to school from a local orphanage, and they were down the back of the class. We're physically there, but that was just about it. Mm-hmm. So I often wonder what happened to those children. Did they ever get any kind of education at all?
Yeah.
I also, listening to all the stories over the last few weeks, the one thing that hits me is the lost potential over those people and to the country. All the good lives and careers and that those people could have had. And that would have benefited themselves, their families, and the country, all lost.
And you say in your...
My brother went to a Christian Brothers school, and he also suffered to the extent that my father had to go to the school to deal with it. And I gather that brother subsequently ended his days in a mental hospital. So there were definitely people in these schools who should never have been let near children. Now, I'm just wondering, is anybody going to do any research to see how we ended up with this sort of educational system? Do you think there's anybody out there, Joe?
Well, it was Edie yesterday who said at the end, she kept asking.
We'll throw light on this. We had it. I know you had a teacher yesterday, but he was the first teacher, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah. And that's the teacher training college. Well, there's two of them, primarily for Catholic, St. Patrick's in Drumcondra and Mary Immaculate College. And I don't know if anyone has done a history of either institution and to see
how teachers came to behave like that. Were they trained into it? Was it part of their training that they had to control children by these means? Or
no, but
warped people teach them.
But Mary, they were breaking even in their use of corporal punishment, as they call it. They were breaking the rules as laid down even then when our country, our state did allow instructions. I'm reading a piece from the Department of Education. Instructions in regard to the infliction of corporal punishment in national schools. Corporal punishment should be administered.
I remember you reading that only, out before, Joe.
Only for grave transgressions. Never for failure.
Yeah, that's right.
Never
I remember you reading
for,
that out.
Never
again,
for failure.
You said the Department of Education washed its hands of things.
Totally.
That family who took the school to court.
Yeah.
And they were given the short shrift by the Department of Education. Yep. So what was the Department of Education doing? Were they,
I'd love to know.
Not doing anything at all.
Yeah.
Now, it's not just Catholic schools.
My husband
went to a Church of Ireland primary school and secondary school, and he suffered as well.
Yeah.
It was a small two-teacher primary school, and the first teacher the children had, she was an absolute terror.
So.
Terrified the children. And he's a 4, 5, and 6-year-old. And he still remembers this day. And then when he went to secondary school, again, teachers were savage.
Yeah.
So it's across the board. It's ecumenical, let's say.
But the common denominator was young children, young vulnerable children, who were the victims by adults.
By adults, that's right. But I mean, what was the culture? Let's face it, obviously our parents are very strict with us as well.
Yeah.
But not to the extent that we were dealt with at school.
Yeah.
So the culture was fairly punitive at that time. But it seems to have gone beyond the beyond as far as school was concerned.
It went way beyond even that which the rules, which were about corporal punishment, allowed. Thanks indeed, Mary, and kind regards to you in Australia this evening, as we say, where you are now. You're 8 or 9 hours ahead. Maybe.
And I hope it's going to go on for a bit more, Joe, and I hope something long-term comes out of it. It reminds me of the letters that were sent into the Gay Burns show after Anne Lovett. Remember that?
Yeah, of course I do.
All those years ago.
In 84.
I still remember being transfixed in my kitchen listening to those. And I think that had an effect on things. So maybe these programmes will have a similar effect.
Okay, Mary. Fingers crossed. Thanks indeed, Mary, and kind regards. Joe@rte.ie.
I attended a religious-run school. At 11 years of age, in primary school, I was slapped 4 times on each hand with a thick leather strap, which we called the red tan, for talking. I returned to my desk, and not out of boldness, I spoke again, telling the girl next to me just how sore my hands were. The nun saw me and gave me 4 more slaps on each hand, and I had blisters. I came home at lunchtime and I found some cold cream in my mum's room, and as I was applying it, she saw me. When I told her what happened, she showed my hands to the public health nurse who was visiting at the time. She advised my mum to go up to the school, and mum did just that, and that nun never touched me again.
Joe, I have another one for your list of weapons of choice. In our school, we had one teacher who had removed the outside leather from a horse's whip. What was left was a long black strip, about 18 inches long, of a hard rubber or maybe plastic. We called it the licorice stick. If somebody was going into her class, they'd be told, "Watch out for the licorice stick." If she was going to punish you, she wouldn't hit you with it then and there. She'd tell you that you had it coming on the Friday. Then on the Friday, we'd all be lined up, and depending on what you'd done, you get 4 whacks or 6 whacks or whatever across your knuckles. The worst part was waiting all week for the licorice stick.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Kevin, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. I was listening to your show there, and it's shocking what I'm listening to. My story is when she sent me out. This teacher sent me out to the ditch to get a stick to beat the children with, and of course, I duly went out to get the stick from the ditch. And of course, because of doing that, I thought I might not get it.
Yeah.
But I was put in line as well, and she went along hitting us all, 2 slaps on each hand, and came to my turn. and I wouldn't hold out my hand. And that back that time, we were wearing short trousers.
So you, this is the stick. She yeah. sent the teacher sent you out to get to pick a stick.
Yeah.
For her to
from
beat.
From the ditch.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You pick the stick.
And she came in and was beating us with it. But it came to my turn, and of course yeah. I wouldn't hold out my hand. And
good man.
As I said,
good
we were man. Wearing short trousers.
Good
so
boy.
She hit me in the legs with it. So I grabbed the stick from her hand and I broke it into little pieces. And I said to her, very afraid, you'll never hit me again. And she didn't, because my mum came up and that following day and really gave her a piece of her mind. And of course, the local priest that time, then she told the local priest, and the local priest said that he would whip us with a horse whip because my mum came up to give the teacher a piece of her mind. Yeah,
but again,
it was terrible. And of course, go on, sorry.
No, I think you're going to say, I think what happened, so many said, when you challenged the teacher, parent or child, you were ignored. You were punished.
Yes, and we were punished after that because she wouldn't teach us then. Yeah. We put it at the back of the class, and we were. If you had a question, she wouldn't answer you, so you were left out. You know.
Yeah.
It was a horrible time, and a horrible woman, a very very bad woman.
Yeah.
And of course, my mom used to say to me, "You're going to meet plenty of bad people in your life, but this woman is particularly bad. But they're all not that."
Okay.
And she would comfort us and make us feel better about it.
Okay.
But that's my story.
Yeah. Thanks, Kevin. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you taking the call. Thank you.
And thank you. I appreciate you making the call. George, you bested your teacher. What happened?
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Yeah.
When I was in school, our headmaster, we got a new headmaster, the old one had retired, things for the cut. But this man came in. No, he wasn't as bad at all. Yeah. And in the days, I used to go down to my grandparents for my lunch. It was halfway between the school and my house. And I'd have my lunch there in the shop. And going back to school, then my grandmother let me take a bag of sweets, rum and butter. I remember it well. And I had the rum and butter going back. And the headmaster passed me and up the finger, and he took the bag of sweets off me. And I go down and I'd be watching him for the rest of the day eating my rum and butters. But he did it a few times.
Yeah.
And I got fed up.
Good man.
And
good
I was
man.
Going back after lunch one day,
good
and
man.
I went out to the store where there's a store there, and I bought a bag with me, and I filled the bag with calf nuts.
Good calf nuts, yeah, good enough.
Yeah,
good enough.
And I went up, and I was moving my mouth as if I had a sweet in it, and he was, and the finger went up again, called up, and I left the bag in his desk, and I went down and I was looking at next, and the hand went out, and the calf nut was into the mouth. Oh Jesus, what a face! But he got such a shock, all he could do was smile down his face.
Oh,
and that was, he never took a sweet on me again.
I know he didn't. If the solution, but what an ingenious little idea you had, George, as a little child. Well done, well done. Okay, George, go to meet him another day. Credits today are Harry Buckless and Sound. Researcher Emma Carley, broadcast coordinator Janice Forfey, producer Annette Egan, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.